You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank, presented by iHeartRadio, right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, and the only podcaster on the planet to catch the 400th touchdown from an NFL quarterback and interview that same quarterback in 2023. OJ McDuffie. Juice, first and foremost, Happy New Year, my man.
Man, Happy New Year, Big Seth. Man, that's a man. I keep coming up to you. You keep coming up with these great stats of mine, bro.
I mean, yeah, it's impressive. I researched that one. You know, sometimes I do the whole it's right until someone proves it wrong. They can't prove it wrong. I researched it. I don't have to send you the list. There's only a select few quarterbacks who even have even thrown 400 touchdown passes.
Right.
And every one of those dudes, some of them who are still playing ball, I couldn't find any one of them that even has a podcast, let alone got their quarterback as a guest like we did with Dan Marino. So
well, no doubt about it. No doubt, man. Well, Happy New Year to you, man. I had a nice little quiet New Year, man. I'm getting too old for the regular traditional New Year. So, yeah, man, Happy New Year, brother.
I appreciate that. And a traditional New Year for OJ McDuffie was quite a party. But I'm glad that, you know, we've calmed things down because we've got, like, you know, a show to produce here.
That's right. That's right.
And as we say goodbye to 2023, it only makes sense that we take some time to reflect upon what an incredible year it was here in the fish tank. And what better way to do that, Juice, than to recognize our top 10 most memorable moments of 2023. So I'll kick things off right now with our number 10 moment of this past year, and that took place back in June when the X-Man, Xavien Howard, joined us. He entered this season as the most tenured Miami Dolphin on the roster, and he spoke with us about his approach to leadership in a locker room where he's now looked at as the old head. So speaking of Javon and speaking of the 2016 season, I think it was two Pro Bowls ago.
Yeah.
He went right after his rookie year and kind of followed you around and did an interview with you for the Dolphins, with the Dolphins content team. It was a great interview. And what jumped out to me, I absolutely loved it, is you told a story of your rookie year and you said Cam Wake.
Yeah, Cam Wake.
Did not speak to you.
No, he didn't.
Penn State guys, man.
Penn State guys.
Maybe that's what it was. So, you know, first of all, he said he didn't say a word to you till you made a play out on the field.
He didn't say nothing. I respect him a lot for that, man. And it's like, you know, I got drafted 38 overall. You got some guys that get drafted and feel like they made it. Mm. And, you know, feel like they ain't got to do nothing.
Yeah, first round pick sometimes.
Yeah, first round pick, yeah.
Every time.
I wasn't going to go there, but he opened the door.
Every time, man.
He's throwing a shot now.
Golly.
But, yeah, and Cam, I seen who he was, you know, I seen his work there and stuff like that. And soon I made a play, he ended up saying something to me. And I'm like, man, this dude ain't say nothing to me, what I did to him.
Yeah. Do you remember what the play was that you made and what did he say?
It was an interception on Kenny Steele, but he just came to me and shook my hand like good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, Cam ain't really talk as much, but when Cam on the field, he mean business.
Yeah.
Yeah, he mean business.
But so that for him was like a big, that's a big outgoing movement.
Yeah.
I love that. Did that experience shape the way that you work with younger guys? Because, I think about this past season. You want to talk about you as a mentor. The DB room that started versus the DB room that you ended up playing with, you had a lot of young cats, and they stepped up. You think about the Cater Cohus, Noah stepped up. I mean, even Javon, as fabulous of a player as he is, he's still a young guy. So you were in this mentorship role. Did that Cameron Wake experience have any impact on the way that you work with and mentor young players?
You had to do it different, man. You know, going into my 7 years, so, you know, these guys different.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like you can't have that same approach Cam did. You know, I had to get in early and talk to him and let him know about how this league work and what we got to do on the back end and everything. It was a cool experience. Like you said, Cater, Noah, Javon, a lot of guys had stepped up. And, like, we looking forward to them guys doing even bigger things this year.
I'm going to touch on that, what you just said, because, you know, coming in 2016, you were playing with some old school cats, Now you're playing with some new school dudes.
Yeah.
It's like you transition from dealing with, you know, the
they
can't wait to the way these new school kids
they
are.
They calling me old. I hate it, man. I'm like, man, I gotta show these guys I still can run.
You're gonna have to.
Like, yeah, like doing the off season, like competing, running and stuff like that. They calling me old head. And I remember back in the day I used to call Rashard Jones old head during my time. And now I'm like, man, look at it backfire on me.
Man, such good stuff from X right there, man. And you can see it, Big Seth. I mean, there's no doubt that the guys like Kader Kohu and Nick Needham and Javon Holland, I mean, they've all looked up to him and learned a lot from him. I mean, I'm just glad for their sake that X didn't take that same approach that, you know, my fellow Nittany Lion, Cam Wake, did. Because
yeah.
he was a little tough on him a little bit, right?
He was, man. He said he was all business, though. He was all business.
Okay, next up is moment number 9 on our list with a guy I saw in a lot of huddles late in my career, Big Seth. And as we all know, that's big Kevin Donnelly. My man, Doink. Doink. Well, Kevin talked about how he had, you know, spent his first few years in Houston protecting Warren Moon. But then he got to Miami and stepped on the field with Dan Marino. I mean, he was a witness to something he simply wasn't prepared for, though.
You know, when you had him back there, you always knew you had a shot. You know, if there's, you know, one of the greatest of all time and great in the fourth quarter and game-winning drive. So that gives you a lot of confidence as an offensive line. And, you know, you put a game plan in, everything's working well. You expect to stick with that game plan and what's been successful for you. But, you know, Seth and I discussed this before we got on this podcast. It was one of those moments I'd never been around in my entire career where he had so much weight and authority and no one would question him. And we're 4th and 10. I don't know where we are on the field, but we're trying to get down there. And if we don't get it, we're done. We lose. And it's 4th and 10, and the play comes in from the coordinator, Kippy Brown. And the first thing I hear is, Dan's like, F this, F this. You know, we're not running this. This is what we're doing. I don't know if OJ remembers it, but that's all I heard. And then next thing I'm thinking, okay, if that's not the play, you know, okay, what are we going to do blocking wise? And he takes the time that we have to really work out what he's going to do with the receivers. And he's communicated with OG, Aronde Gadsden, and said, you know, do this or this different. And, you know, he wasn't the fastest guy. So we kind of did a little trick him on him, a little slant and go instead of the traditional slant that usually it was his bread and butter, right, OJ? I mean, he wasn't going deep.
No.
But, man, it was a great play. He still could not run anybody. He got caught before he got to the end zone. But the funniest thing about it, the reason I paid attention to it so much and it's been such a fond memory of mine was when he said that to the play and just go ahead and change it right there on the spot. We got a few seconds to get this snap off, and we're going to the line of scrimmage. I'm like, Dan, what's the protection? What do you want? And basically – he was like, y'all do whatever the hell y'all need to do. All I need is a couple of speed bumps up there. I'm getting rid of the ball. I felt like, okay, cool. We'll take ownership for this. But at the same time, like, we got no control right now. We'll call something, hope it works. But the backhanded, you know, kind of part of that was like, we weren't really that needed on that play. The 5 linemen could have just dove to the ground, you know, just curled up like a ball. He just needed someone to just slow him down for just a half step, and he was getting the ball off. And he did. It worked out great. The protection was fine. But I just, you know, I'm a guy that worked. I watch film. I want to know everything ahead of time because I wasn't the most gifted offensive lineman. I had to work and scratch and fight for everything I got. And suddenly you're telling me, just go ball? Hey, just the ball. Just get it done. I'm like, I don't work that way, man. Like, this, I need to know. I need a plan. What is the play? But we got it done. We won the game. I mean, so it was all fun in the locker room afterwards. But that was one of those moments. I'm like, man, I've seen it all now, man. I just saw him override everything. He just tapped into that, like, 16 years of experience and said, no, I know better. This is my show right now. We're going to go win this.
Juice, I love that story so much. And it seems like anyone who has ever played with Dan had a similar experience. And how great of a storyteller was Kevin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that was an underrated interview for sure. So I'm glad it made the list. But we're going to flip the field now from what you like to say is the best side of the ball. And we're going to get a little defensive. So we're going all the way back to March of this past year, where we were honored to host Rashard Jones for his first ever podcast interview. Heck, I'm not even sure that Rashard has done one since then. This might be the only podcast interview he's ever done. And he brought us our 8th most memorable moment of 2023 when he shared a serious wake-up call he received from the late Tony Sperano. May Coach Sperano rest in peace.
Well, there was another guy in the building that was making decisions at that point in time. And so your first coach as an NFL player was Tony Sperano.
Yep.
And actually had for 2 years, right? He was here for your first 2 years. And he was He was known as a tough guy coach. You're known as a tough physical player. Was that like a match made in heaven, or did his personality help you evolve into the player you became?
I'll give you a funny story about Coach Sperano. Rest in peace, Tony Sperano, man. Great dude. So when I came here, when I got drafted here, it was Yermai Bell, Tyrone Culver, Chris Clemens. We brought in John Amaya and myself. Right. We was the two guys that came in. Tony Sperano, the last preseason game, I had a heel contusion. My heel was like sore, real sore. I couldn't play. Tony Sperano brought me upstairs. He said, "You know, when you got to go upstairs to see the head coach,
right.
That's not a good
right.
thing.
Never
good
thing. Playbook though.
That's a lot of reasons. That's
not
a good
thing. You get what I'm saying? So I'm young player coming in. I'm like, man, what the head coach want me for? You get what I'm saying? So I go upstairs. You know, sit face to face with Tony Sperano. He said, "Hey, Rashad, listen. Right now, you're the weakest link." I was like, what? I'm looking at him out of the eye. He's like, "You're the weakest link." I'm like, "What you mean?" He said, "We got five safeties. Only four are going to make this team. And right now, John Amaya's playing the Harlem special teams. He's going crazy. Yermai Bell is a veteran guy. He's going to be here." He ran down the list. I'm like, damn. You know, we got the same age. And I called Joel Siegel like, "Hey, bro, they're about to cut me." He said, "I don't think so, man." "Yeah, they are. You know what I'm saying?" He brought me upstairs and let me know what it was. But what Tony Sperano was doing was he seen more in me. Mm. Like Joel said, he didn't want to cut me. He seen more in me. He wanted me to give a little bit more, you know, special team wise. You know, coming in from University of Georgia, I came in to play safety.
Right.
I didn't know the importance of playing special team. So if it's young guys out there listening, hey, man, get next to those special team coaches.
Yes, sir.
And you can get a job in this NFL. You can get make a living in this league playing special team, you know. And I didn't know how special that was, you know, by playing special team. I thought you had to make the team by being a starter or a backup. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And he put the motor on my back to, you know, continue to push harder and be the starter and be the player I was. I got to give a lot of credit to Tony Sperano, for sure.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
I also, you know, I think it was Kendall Langford was on, and he said he got called in. Somebody told us he always had the lights down because he had the thing with, you know, remember he wore the sunglasses.
Yeah.
Right, but people, if you didn't know there was a condition, they just thought it was like they were being brought into the back room.
Right.
Hey, have a seat. You know, a little tough guy there.
Right.
So I can imagine you as a young guy, and you are a young guy because, you know, you came out as a junior.
Yeah, I was 22 years old. You know what I mean? I didn't know nothing about the logistics of being in the NFL and how to cut in and making the team work. You know, I'm just here putting in work, learning as much as I can, and, you know, try to make it happen. You know, and by me being a fifth-round draft pick, I knew nothing was promised.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like this. And you look in the locker room, at that time, there was cutting guys left and right. You know, you come in your locker room one day, next day, somebody gone. You know what I'm saying? You're whoa.
Don't become too good of friends with anybody.
You see what I'm saying? This shit's serious.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, Sperano did put the motor on my back, man, to kind of push it and make it happen.
Yeah. Wow.
Man, that was such a cool story, Big Seth. I mean, Rashad told us how he played with a chip on his shoulder his entire career. And that moment right there with Coach Sperano challenging him because he knew Rashad, you know, has so much more to offer. I mean, it really set the tone for Rashad to play at a high level for probably the next decade. Yeah, I always tell you, you know, how defensive guys are, they're wired a little differently, Big Seth. they really are, man. Even though I consider myself an offensive player that could probably hang with the defensive guys.
Right.
I mean, they were just different. And boy, oh boy, did that come to surface with my man Dario Romero. Man, Dario, man, what a tough-nosed dude. I mean, Seth had to literally fight for everything he ever got on the football field. But in our seventh most memorable moment of 2023, Dario shared with us that he was ready to fight anyone for anything, anywhere, even if it was outside of Children's Hospital on Christmas.
Nastiest player in the CFL.
Seth, I think we've got a theme here, man. We've got a theme here, you know, when it comes to you and fighting, my man. I mean, the crazy part is, I mean, you think about it, it wasn't limited to just the field. It wasn't limited to, you know, the other side of football. Please tell us what happened with you and Adewale Ogunleye outside of a Children's Hospital.
Oh, man. That was actually that was a great day. We had a great time in the hospital. It was during the Christmas time, so we had our jerseys on, Santa hats on, and
oh wow! It sounded like bad Santa. It sounded like some bad Santa.
It could have been. It could have got bad. But anyway, after we were done, we were coming down, and Big Larry Chester, drove. So we're on the way, and I called a window seat. Somebody called shotgun, so I I call the window seat. Wait, right?
You're right. You're right. There's rules. There's rules.
There's
right?
rules. Yeah, there's rules.
How many people are in this car? This rules. Is the defensive line. How many people are in this car?
Bro, we had, I think it held 9. I think we had 7 or 8 in there. So
oh, big boy.
I'm trying to get a window, right? And so, I call window, and nobody, you know, denied it at the time. So we get in there, and I open a door for Wale so he can head to the back. And Wale just wanted to camp out in the seat that I called. And I was like, come on, man. I called it. He's like, he just kind of looked at me like, I'm staying here. So the short temper that I had, man, all of a sudden I snatched him out of the car. We were squared up. I was telling him, I remember this clearly because I must have said, man, I'm going to kill you or something. And he's looking around at teammates. I'm like, he's trying to, he said he's going to kill me. So that hyped him up. And we kind of went round and round the car. No punches were ever thrown.
Wait
but,
a second. You're chasing each other around the car?
Dancing. Just dancing.
Yeah. And
dancing.
You got like Timbo there, Jermaine trying to keep everything cool, keep us separated.
Oh, I bet they were hyping up.
So they threw the Prince in the front seat. And I ended up in the goddamn wait,
the Prince. Who's the Prince?
Wale.
I know.
That's Wale, man. That's Wale, man. So they,
the Prince.
So Wale got ended up getting shotgun. They throw me in the way back because I'm still fired up, and they wanted to keep us separated. And it was quiet once we got in the car. Nobody kept it going. And
so you got
all
the
of
back
a sudden,
window.
Wale throw, yeah, I'm in the back. So Wale throws his hand back. And just fist bumped him, and it was over at that point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and after that, Jermaine Haley had to talk to me about, like, hey, he's like, we can't be doing this, man. It looks bad. You're a new guy. Like, we can't be having this stuff out here. And I knew that, and that I didn't have any hard feelings toward Wale. I just wanted my dang seat, man.
He wanted his window seat.
And you know what, man? At that point, you got to get your respect, man. You know what I mean? It ain't about – you know what I mean? It's about respect.
But Juice, you were at the children's hospital.
Man, I know, man. But they was on their way out. The kids were already back and tucked away. The kids were tucked away. They was on their way out, man. It was good to go, man.
They were at the children's
hospital.
Yeah,
we were good to go.
You're a bunch of grown men, first of all. and you're Dolphin superstars. You're there to brighten Christmas and the holiday season for these kids that are suffering. And you guys are fighting over a damn window seat.
Back,
yeah, hey, like Juice said, man, it is about respecting that locker
so
room,
special.
And you get tested, you get tried, and you know it's a mind game. They want to see what you got, and man, that's just me, man. I got a warrior mentality, and I'm gonna get the respect that I feel I deserve, and I believe I earned it because me and Wale, we were boys that time. You know, I think we were both undrafted and.
Yeah,
we would
yeah.
talk all the time about, you know, how to just do whatever it takes to stay on the field and earn a spot on the team. So there was no beef after that whatsoever. It was just, like Juice said, man, it was an opportunity to just stick up for myself and earn respect.
Oh, man, that's just too much, Juice. I can't help but laugh every time I hear that one. I, like, have this picture in my mind of Dario and Wale in Santa hats, and they're chasing each other around Larry Chester's truck. It's absolutely priceless.
Oh,
if the
man.
Catalog wasn't so damn strong, I might argue that this needs to be higher on the list. It was a crazy story.
Yeah.
But the interviews were indeed strong throughout the entire year, and they weren't always filled with laughter. For our number 6 moment, we turn to our guy, Israel Gutierrez of ESPN, who was so open and so vulnerable in sharing his story of coming out publicly after building a successful media career, and then the concerns that Izzy had about how those who knew him best would respond.
And you showed up, and there's 60 celebs. You know, you talk about being uncomfortable in the NFL locker room, so now you're walking in with all of these football players and JT, you know, this whole what would JT think concept, after now coming out to the world. And if I recall, you guys had a little conversation and it went really well. And he was just one in a number of individuals that you covered that were incredibly supportive.
Well, it's interesting with Jason because I didn't really know what any of his, you know, thoughts were on the subject and never really asked. And so the thing that I think I mentioned this in the email to you, I know I did to all my friends, is I never wanted you to feel like I was lying to you, you know, and so developing a friendship with Jason It was like, it was intimidating and it was cool that I was friends with him, but I just, and I hate that sentence because it makes me feel crappy, but I never wanted to feel like I'm lying to anybody. And so whenever I was face to face with somebody for the first time after telling them, that's what I was thinking of. Like, it's cool. Like, I trust you. I don't think anything poorly of you. It just, I had to wait. And so that's what that conversation was like. And it kind of brings up, you know, similar thoughts to when, like, I told my sisters, because, you know, we have a great relationship my entire life. And I didn't tell them until I was 31. It doesn't make any sense, you know? So I think that's where I was at that time. I was like, I'm ready to, like, come out and show everybody. But, you know, there's a back and forth with this. And, like, I always feel like, you know, I could have done better and I could have, you know, navigated everything a little bit better. And so there's always that feeling of like, hey, I'm sorry too, you know.
But I can't imagine any of us needed that.
Probably.
Right? I mean, that was all things that you were feeling, and understandably so, but I can't imagine Jason, Dwayne Wade, your sister, anybody like you were lying to me. Like, nobody accused you of that.
No. And I mean, like, yeah, I mean, all these, you mentioned Dwayne Wade, he reached out, you know, Gabby Union reached out, Udonis Haslam, a lot of people from the Heat. It was just, I don't know, like, when you're in that sort of place, you know, you're in your own head the whole time growing up. And so you just have these conversations and you just make these assessments. And that's what it was like, where I just, you know, I just thought that that's what people might think or that's what people would think. And, like, I will say the one thing that it allowed me to do was, like, I can compartmentalize like a son of a gun. Because, like, you can tell me a problem, and I was like, oh, I'll get to that. I'll, like, triage that. I'll get to it right when it's necessary. And so me, like, being able to focus on my career, being able to focus on my family, being able to, and I say my family, I mean my sisters, my parents, my nieces and nephews, you know, just a great group of friends that I had, you included, really just kind of buoyed me. And I didn't need that other part of my life necessarily. Right. At least I didn't think I did. I probably could have used some of it, but didn't need it. And so, yeah, whenever I think about all that other stuff, like, it kind of comes out, as you can tell, in certain times when I talk about it, like, unexpectedly. But for the most part, you know, it was all a great experience. And, like, you know, somebody like JT just added to that. And I think hopefully my experience and me being around him maybe added to his, you know, thoughts on, you know, the LGBTQ community in general.
I'm sure it did for him. I know it did for me. I'm sure it did for a lot of us.
Man, Big Seth, what an incredible story, man. I mean, I can't even imagine the things Izzy was going through. And then for him to feel comfortable enough and safe enough to share that on our show, I mean, that was really, really special, man. And since you and Izzy, you know, are both Gators, I get that part.
Yes, sir.
I guess we'll throw one more Gator into the mix here with an all-time leader in Fish Tank appearances.
Oh, boy.
And we know who that is, Mr. Channing Crowder. Now, we've interviewed Channing at my house in the early days. We went to his house at one point. But this year, Big Seth, the Dolphins really set us up real nice and organized a live Miami Dolphins podcast night to kick off the 2023 season and had us on the improv stage, man. The improv stage, along with, you know, our guy Travis Wingfield. And here comes Crowder. I mean, this interview was everything you would expect it to be. And then some. And he also delivered our fifth most memorable moment of the year when he shared his thoughts on Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa.
But that's the thing, and I bullshit a lot of y'all, see, but I do embrace the Dolphins. I love the Dolphins. I know every player. I know every backup. And so when people want to argue me about the Dolphins, it's like Colin Cowherd always wants to go at Tua. And I'm like, man, kiss my ass. Like, Tua is a monster. When Tua played them six games, bro, 300 yards a game? Bro, Tua is a monster. He just has to stay healthy.
What makes him a monster? What makes him special?
His accuracy, his understanding of the game. He really, like, you see him, he checks. It's like that little dumbass camera they put on his helmet and everybody want to talk about it. I looked at that camera and saw that motherfucker look twice both ways in like 3 seconds. And I was like, this shit's impressive. Yeah. But people don't know. They're like, oh, that's goofy. I'm like, no, this shit makes sense. And so, but seeing it from a side of... To get back to your question, Travis, seeing it from a side of playing against Peyton Manning, playing against Tom Brady, playing against Drew Brees, playing against...
Phil Rivers?
With all them babies. Rivers was a monster, too. But playing against those guys and seeing their processing, I had to look at the processing of a quarterback. Tua processes at a level that's above his age. He processes defenses at a level that is on the, I don't want to say, whenever you bring up Brady and Rodgers and all those guys, they're like, oh, you're playing under Rodgers. That's Seth's voice. But they're like,
now it's mine again. Great.
But they're like, oh, you compare him to Rodgers. I'm like, I'm not comparing him to Rodgers, but how he sees the field is so special. And he knows it, this the simplest thing in the world. Tyreek Hill is about to get open sooner or later. He's too goddamn fast. And Tua knows that. And whenever he knows it's break and they have the timing down, like you're saying, like Tyreek said he's going to have 2,000 yards. I don't know about that. That's a lot of damn yards. But Tyreek going to have 1,700 plus because him and Tua are on the same page. But Tua's processing, it was just reconfirmed when I saw that helmet video and saw him check right, check left, and go back right and deliver the ball. He had his hand off the ball before he went back, and I was like, oh, that's special vision of the field.
I can't imagine that anyone listening to this recap hasn't heard that episode with Channing, but if you haven't, I will just say this. By the time he was done, the management of the Dania Beach Improv came up to him. They asked him to host his own comedy show. He was that funny. And now you can add, he's not only a radio host, he's not only a former NFL player, you can all, and he's not only a podcaster, but you can add stand-up comic to Channing's resume because he killed it in his recent first show. And from what I understand, there's going to be more. Juice, the guy, is an absolute legend. All right. Things are heating up here. I'm sure listeners are like, well, if Channing was only number five, who in the hell could possibly top that? Well, our number four moment came just recently, actually, when former Dolphins quarterback Scott Mitchell joined us. He checked every box as far as being a great podcast guest. He was engaging. He was funny. He was interesting. And he was really, really candid.
Yeah.
And for our fourth most memorable moment of the past year, Scott Mitchell discussed how he felt like a failure even after 12 NFL seasons.
Let me go back to feeling like, you know, you failed in your career. And I think you can ask any player. I think you could ask Dan Marino this, that there's probably more you could have done. Like he goes, I never got to win a Super Bowl. I don't know what that's like. And for me, that's all I wanted. like I never looked at like, okay, what's my career look like? You know? And I always looked at like, man, I just want to win. I just want to win the Super Bowl. And when I played, I go, I'm not going to the Super Bowl until I go as a player. Right. I wasn't going to give myself the pleasure of that. And it's just how you're wired, right? You're just wired to be competitive. And you go, give me another game, right? Give me another quarter. Give me another throw, whatever it is. I'll get it done. You know, you're just wired that way. And it really never, you're never satisfied with it. And I think that's part of what keeps you around, what keeps you going. When I was done at 12 years, I still physically could play. I just didn't have anyone that wanted to sign me. And I'm telling you, that's worse than having an injury that I would have rather had my leg snapped off. So it's like, nope, you can't ever play again. As opposed to, no, I can still play, but you guys are just not letting me. That was hard. And it was really hard to deal with. And I actually came to terms with all of this failure or feeling like I was a failure when I went on this reality TV show. And it was a humbling experience. And I think what I really got from it, this is very real to me. I mean, it's all it is a reality TV game show, right? You go on this game show and whoever loses the most weight wins a prize at the end. I mean, that's how it works. But for me, it was like real as rain. You know, it was a very personal journey for me. And really it was about surrendering to your weakness and surrendering to being humble. And the thing that like is so challenging for you, if you will turn to it and just surrender, it's where you really find strength. And for me, why I was so reluctant is I just knew people would probably take shots at me. Look at that guy. Look what happened to him. He let himself go. You know, he looks terrible. He looks awful. And for me, it was quite the opposite. It's like I was willing to take those shots or whatever people were going to say because it's something in my life I have struggled with, and it's the darndest thing in the world, and it really is. In fact, I have stuff here right next to me working on, you know, losing, getting in a healthy state, So it's been, it's continues and has been a struggle for me, but it's one where I just said, you know, I've got to accept that I can't do this on my own, that I need help from other people. It's just the thing that in my life, that's the challenge. And what I learned on the show was those failures, those moments in your life that aren't the most pleasant or you didn't succeed at actually are the things that are the greatest blessings. Because you find so much more about yourself and who you are and what you're made of, what you're capable of in those moments than you would if everything was just kind of hunky-dory. And so I really treasure some of those tougher, more painful moments in my life, and they really helped me realize more of who I am and what I'm made of, and developed a lot of things in my life that I cherish. You know, I like who I am. I like what I've become in my life. And so much of that came out of those moments that maybe were disappointments or deemed maybe failures.
Man, Scott was absolutely incredible, Big Seth. I mean, there had to be three or four other moments that could have made this list easily. And the thing about it was, for me, I mean, I only played one season with Scott, and that was my rookie year. And maybe I was a little too young or was way too early in my career. But after the interview, man, I realized how much you really don't know about a guy, even after playing an entire season with him. And I learned so much more about Scott from our interview that it makes me wish, you know, I'd been able to, you know, get to know him a little bit better back in our day. A guy I did get to know really well and was honored to do so was my main man, Zach Thomas. I mean, 2023 was a life-changing year for Zach as he solidified his place in football history, putting on that gold jacket and making his forever home in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, we all saw how emotional it was for Zach to hear the news that the wait was finally over. And in April, the wait was over for us as well. Zach dove back into the fish tank for a very special episode, and he delivered our number three moment of 2023 when he explained the thrill he experienced each time his elite preparation would pay off with a big play on the field.
I mean, I own that, like preparation. I mean, when I was playing, I always, yeah, with the overachiever label, I saw that as disrespect, right? Yeah. Same with try hard guy. Oh, I hated that.
Yeah, that's the worst. Right
don't.
There.
Oh man,
that's the worst.
And
right
that's
there.
Where, yeah. Hey, it helped motivate me. But now with preparation, that's part of the game.
That'd be right.
Right. And so, but you have to have talent to be in the NFL. We all know that. But I mean, the way I look at it is more like if you're a strong guy and somebody just says, "Oh, he's a gym rat," okay. Well, there's a reason.
Why is that negative?
Why is that? So right. for me, I mean, when I played, to hear all that, I would be pissed. But now that I'm a Hall of Famer, who cares?
That's right. That's right.
You know what I'm saying? I'll own it. You know, I'm like, yeah, man. There's, hey, my prep was good, man. That's the one thing I will, you know, pat myself on the back, man. My prep was good, man. And it was something, a skill I trained and, but that's what I love about the game. It's the locker room, but I miss the prep.
Game plan is nice, right?
And you find one little thing on the tape, and if they just even line in that during the game, and they might be on the right hash, and you're like, I know it's coming.
Yeah.
That right there is like such a high, especially if you make the play, and you're like, I own this team, right? You know, and it could be one play out of 70 plays.
Yeah.
But it's just that is what I miss. It's irreplaceable, you know.
You know, it's so funny you say that real quick, Big Seth, because I hear the story with Peyton Manning talking about.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
You're in my playbook.
Yeah. Go ahead, Big Seth.
No, go. You got it.
Like, I'm hearing what Peyton Manning's saying about, you know, how he would check and then you would check. And then you would check and then it seemed like you were in his head, his playbook. Like, you were talking about your preparation. But he kind of figured that you knew exactly what the hell he was doing, too. One of the smartest guys ever played a game on the other side of football.
Yeah. And you know what? I had fun when we played up in Indy because it was quiet when the offense was
right.
Up.
I
remember you
telling
me that.
Extremely quiet.
That makes a difference. And it's hard when you're playing here. And it's hard on him as well. But we played them in our division twice a year until they moved out. But you start to figure out their numbers. But it doesn't matter because they have, like, they change colors in between a live color to a dummy color, you know. So you wouldn't know until maybe partway through the drive. But there were certain things, especially short yardage. They didn't have a lot of short yardage tape. So when it's short yardage, I remember this one play that They do a Y flex. He's outside the receiver. And they bring in two backs. And they're always 21 personnel. Well, 11 personnel. And they brought in 21. And so they put the tight end out wide. And on tape, for the last 2 years, they run the lead. And all I said, I'm not knowing. You know, I know they're going to the three tech. So I'm just like, yell lead right at the start. And I just see him like, and I blitz it. And hey, you know what? I'm like, if it wasn't a lead, I'm going to get hit. Marcus Pollard's going to be behind me or whatever. But I hit it, made the play, and just got up and just, I'm in your book, boy. I'm in your book all day. You know, and but that was one play.
Yeah, that's
so
all it
maybe
took.
He's thinking that's all it takes is that one play. Yeah. And they thinking you're in their playbook. And I wasn't. And you can't be thinking like that anyway. You got to react. Even if you know the play, you can overrun the play, right? So it's one of those that it was that chess match up there was really cool. But lining us up and everything, they made everything look the same. But lining us up just so we wouldn't give up the big play was what I feel like I did good with.
How cool was that?
Yeah, man.
Goosebumps, Juice. Like goosebumps up and down my arms. Any of us who were in the building during Zach's storied tenure as a Miami Dolphin saw firsthand how much time and effort he put into his preparation. But to hear him talk about it like that, special stuff. And speaking of special, we had heard from multiple guys just how special, and I'm using the Travis Wingfield air quotes, just how special the Blackwood brothers, Glenn and Lyle, were. They were special players, but also unique personalities who loved a good prank. But when Glenn Blackwood joined us in February, he shared one of the all-time greatest stories we've ever heard on this show. The story, the subject matter, the cast of characters involved, and the joy that Glenn took in retelling it all combined to make this the second most memorable Fish Tank moment of 2023. There was a lot of fun off the field as well, and that you and your brother had a reputation of being the ultimate team pranksters. And one of the stories that was one of the best stories ever told on this podcast, and it was told a couple different times, and I don't want you to worry here because apparently Marino knows at this point. So Marino knows the deal. But this gag about the stolen Dan Marino shoulder pads and the subsequent ransom attempt had to be one of the funniest things we've ever heard on the show. You got to tell us how the hell you got the idea, you and your brother or whoever was involved, to say, all right, this is an opportunity with these shoulder pads stolen.
Well, all things go back to Joe Rose. to a certain extent. So Joe was involved in this, but basically, you know, you're in training camp and you're bored out of your mind. I mean, in between practices, you're like, you know, what are you, they got soap operas on. What are we going to do? You just get stir crazy. And so we're sitting there, we're in our room at, this was back when we were at St. Thomas. We used to be called Biscayne College. And we're in our room, and Joe Rose comes in, and he starts talking to me and my brother. And, you know, Joe's just trying to – he's like a little gadfly. He's trying to stir up something. And so Joe's in there, and we're reading a paper, and Lyle goes, look at this here. And we had just scrimmaged the Falcons up in Suwanee in Atlanta. And on the way back, somebody stole Marino's shoulder pads. I don't know, whoever it was on the plane or whether they saw number 13's bag, they stole Marino's shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And they were gone. The shoulder pads were gone. And so we're sitting there, we're reading about it, and Marino's, that there's a thing in the paper, and it's Marino's going, oh, you know, I just really, man, you know, they could have taken anything but my shoulder pads. I'm so used to them. I've had them for all these years. And we're going, oh, that poor little fella. I just feel so bad for him. And all three of us, is me, Rose, and my brother, kind of like, oh, y'all, we feel bad for Danny. That. And I said, hey, man, what if we were to call the Dolphins and ransom, say we got the shoulder pads and ransom those things back? Well, as soon as I mentioned that, Joe Rose jumps up and says, we got to do this. We've got to do this. Well, I would come up with the ideas, but my brother was the chief operation officer. He would put the plan together. And so what happened was we put this plan together to ransom these shoulder pads back to the Dolphins and for some sort of bounty, some sort of money. And we really weren't going to do it, but we just thought it'd be because we didn't have the shoulder pads. How are we going to do it? We didn't have shoulder
pads. It can only go so far, right?
Yeah, you ain't gonna get no money. They weren't that dumb. And so we said, okay, here's what we'll do. We kind of laid out the script, and Joe goes, there's no way either of y'all can talk. Y'all have that Texas accent, and they're going to recognize you right off the bat. I've got to do the call.
And I love it.
Lyle and I looked at each other and kind of like, you know what? He's right. For one time, he's right. And so Joe calls him. He puts a towel over the receiver of the phone so he can muffle his voice. And he talks to Ann, who's Shula's secretary.
Right.
And he talks to her, and he says, I was calling. I was reading the article about Dan Marino's shoulder pads, and I've got his shoulder pads. And for $5,000 in unmarked bills, we will deliver the shoulder pads back to Miami Dolphins. Well, she goes, well, I don't know. I can't make that decision. And Joe goes, well, you're going to have to make the decision because we're not going to stay on the phone. You're probably tracing the call. He hangs up. So we get on the phone and we call. So we went over and there was two pay phones in the breezeway, and we got the phone number off one of the pay phones. And so we went. So Joe Rose calls back and he goes, this is the guy with the shoulder pads again. And anyway, he starts and he goes, you only have 30 seconds because we're only going to be able to. And she goes, you're not giving me enough time. And we felt bad for him. But anyway, so she's running around. All of a sudden, so we said, well, call this number when you make a decision. Well, we gave him the payphone number. So then we go kind of hovering outside our room waiting for the payphone to ring. So Stu, they give the phone number to Stu Weinstein, our security guy.
Sure.
And Stu, they call the number. And I can't remember if it was a lineman. I know it was a lineman. It was offensive or defense, I don't know. Was walking by the payphone. The phone rings. He picks it up, goes, hello. They said, we're calling about Marino's shoulder pads. He goes, I don't know anything about no shoulder pads. And he hangs up. Next thing you know, there's buzzing going around in the locker. So I said, I'm going to go over to the locker room and see how this thing's playing out. So I walked over in the locker room, acting like I was getting stuff up. I can hear people running around, yelling, screaming about the shoulder pads. I go back over the room. I said, guys, we got to shut this thing down because we're going to get in major league trouble. They're going all over the place. All of a sudden, Marino comes skidding up in his, I think he had a Corvette back then. Right. He skids up to the locker room, goes walking in, and they said, they want $5,000. He goes, I don't care what they want. Pay them. And I mean, there was. So finally, we called him back and said, look, this thing's getting out of hand. We put the shoulder pads in a white. We looked out, there was a white van in the parking lot. We didn't know whose it was. We said, we put the shoulder pads in the back of that white van in the parking lot, and it just hung up. And there they go running out. They open the van up. There ain't no shoulder pads.
So you guys are looking out the window, and they're running.
We're watching the whole thing. And so, look, man, by the time this ended, and I said, okay, guys, we can't tell anybody about this because Shula will flat cut our rear ends.
Right, right. And
so we didn't tell anybody. We didn't tell anybody for like 5 years. I mean, it was.
Oh my God.
It was so sacred information.
It is so good.
That was one of the many. There's others that happened, but that was one of the great practical jokes of all time.
That was so good, Big Seth. I mean, so damn good. I mean, we've heard three versions of that story now, but there was nothing better than hearing it from Glenn himself. And you're so right, man. When he starts laughing at, you know, his own stuff and just thinking about it, I mean, it was absolutely priceless. I love, you know, that Danny was so worried about those damn shoulder pads because, I mean, you would think with his confidence, because we know about his confidence,
right.
You know, he could wear anything and be the best player on the field at any time. But man, oh man, Glenn and Lyle and our good friend Joe Rose, man, they did a number on him that day. So you might ask, how in the world do you top that? Well, Big Seth, you know we can, right? There was only one way. You bring Dan the man himself into the fish tank. The number one moment of last year happened just a couple weeks ago when Dan the Man joined us for the interview we've been waiting for since we created this thing, what, five and a half years ago, Big Seth?
Yeah.
And Danny, of course, being Danny, did not disappoint. I mean, he was cool, he was confident, he was funny, and I'm pretty sure he had a lot of fun with us as well, Big Seth. It was such an honor to share the huddle with my quarterback one more time. And it was on our amazing new set as well. I mean, it was absolutely perfect. So the most memorable fish tank moment of 2023 was our chart-topping interview with the man, Dan Marino. Now, we won't replay the entire interview, but what we do have for you is a fantastic fish tank two-minute drill orchestrated by the man who spent a career as the best to ever do it.
Well, Danny, we end every episode of this podcast with the fish tank two-minute drill, okay? Oh, yeah. Over the course of your storied career, you had 37 fourth quarter comebacks. So I think, Juice, I'm expecting the best two-minute drill we've ever had here. I mean, who can run a two-minute drill like Dan Marino?
Okay. Danny never won. No kicker ever. No, we're not kicking in. We're not kicking.
We're going to score.
Drill, we're going to score a touchdown.
Unless we have to kick.
But we don't start off with that. So Mike's going to put 2 minutes up on the clock here. You want any timeouts? Because if you need them, you got them.
No.
It doesn't need timeouts. All right, we're just going to go with this thing. All right, so we're going to start it with just some quick short routes to move the sticks. We're going to call this word association. I just need one-word responses to the names that I throw out to you. We got to start with Don Shula.
Okay. One word?
One word. Don All Shula. Right.
Tough.
Mark Clayton.
Badass.
Mark Duper.
He's a badass, too.
Bruce Smith.
He's a badass, too.
In the wrong kind of way. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hearing all that.
I love Bruce, but... he used to take care of me a little bit, you know? He'd actually hit me and actually picked me up.
Okay, I don't think he did that for many people.
No,
pretty good.
No, that's not one word.
No, it's not, but that's all right. O.J. McDuffie.
Tough as it gets, yeah. Yeah, badass too.
Joe Rose, I appreciate that.
Oh, he's...
I want to give away, man.
I
was going to, man. I can't. Though.
Badass too, man. Yeah. Joe Rose, soft.
Just leave it at that.
Soft as a tissue coming out of the...
Oh, I love it. Oh, this is so good. All right, we're going to open up the offense a little bit. The clock is still running.
All right.
Use a quick release, but your answers can be more than one word here. All right, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. We know how you made Jim Carrey's career on that movie.
Right.
$100 million film, when that was a big deal back then. Is an absolute classic, but there were three things to me that I thought were incredibly unrealistic. But what was the most unrealistic? So was it that someone stole a living dolphin from the stadium? Was it that Ace Ventura caught a bullet with his teeth? Or was it the idea that you would actually be the holder on a field goal attempt?
It was, it's all three of those, actually. You know, I mean, and everything about that movie is unrealistic. So it doesn't even matter.
I love it.
But I want to say that that's probably the best work I ever did.
Agreed. Agreed.
So we all know that there's no defense of a perfect throw.
Yeah.
But. Which defender would have the best shot at stopping you?
As far as a corner?
Corner, probably. Yeah.
Corner. Man, I mean, there are some guys, real dudes I've played against over the years. And Dion was really good. Really good. Mike Haynes. Mm. Mike Haynes. That group, Lester, Mike Haynes. Albert Lewis. Oh, wow. Rod Woodson.
Oh, yeah.
Like those cats. Like all those cats.
They had a little bit of a chance.
Yeah, no, it wasn't like, you know, we got our guys.
I know,
we got our dudes, you got your dudes.
Right.
And I feel pretty good about our guys, so I'm going to throw on you. It's not like I'm not going to throw on you. But those cats are real deal.
No doubt. All right, final question here. This is a mystery that all Dolphins have wanted solved for quite some time.
Oh, geez.
Did the director of that commercial just get under your skin, or was there really a flub?
Which one? Oh,
send it in.
It might have been a flub, but we were doing those commercials all day. Like, it was all day. And it was in Orlando, you know, quarterback club. And all the guys are there. And we're going from one spot to the other. It was the last one. And it was a young kid. And I'll be honest with you. If he's watching somehow, I'm sorry. I was just over all of it. And so it was no f-ing flub.
That is the 2-minute drill.
Yeah.
Dan Marino finds himself in the end zone again.
I'm sure you wanted me to say that. Just make sure you bleep it out.
Everybody wanted you to say that. Danny, this was great. This was worth the 5-year wait to get you in the fish tank.
Come on, man. I've been here before that.
I love it, man.
All right, dude.
Thank you, Danny. So thanks for diving in, Danny.
Love
man.
You, brother.
Appreciate it. Love you, too, man.
Love you, man.
So good. Well, there you have it. No better way to end the year than with a Dan Marino touchdown. 2023 was an incredible year in the fish tank, Juice, and we are so grateful for the Miami Dolphins, for our late great champion Jason Jenkins for believing in this show, for Tom Garfinkel and Ann Nolan for continuing to believe, for this amazing crew that we get to work with of Mike Milius, JT Santos, Taylor Wilson, Kyle Arnett, Hunter, Barbara, Chris Clark, Kristen Hingston, everyone who helped to bring the fish tank to life this past year. Victor Ortega, he got us that brand new logo.
Yes.
Hero and the team that designed the new set. Truly everyone who was a part of this special year.
And last, but certainly not least, we're grateful for each and every one of you who have cared enough to listen to this podcast. To all of the Fish Tank fans, thanks for diving in.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Just like Juice said, thanks for diving into the Fish Tank presented by iHeartRadio. Be sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you're using, and don't be afraid to rate the show or leave us a comment. We love your feedback. And remember, you can find us as well as Drive Time with Travis Wingfield and all of our international partners on MiamiDolphins.com. Never been at Fish Tank.